Good morning. My name is Lama. Welcome to the Kadampa Center. Happy Sunday. I'd like to read the prayer list before Venerable George comes in. Prayers for happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters, all the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. Geshe Sopa Rinpoche, Robin Bongiorno, Dr. Diane Kelson, Sally Comer, James Foley, Wendy Johnson, Shyamali Mitra, Stephen Sotloff, Miss Kitty the Cat, Scooter the Dog, Job Search, Roseanne Barona, John Carroll, Joey Gooch, Joe Griffiths, Jim Kay, Michelle Matich, thank you, Robert Palermo, Mark Pristoff, Alex Schwartz, Greg Weaver, Sandy Rimbush. Prayers for health and well-being. Kyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Cherki Lamo, Venerable Song Tsering. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, for the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Roger and Barb Alexander, Russell Allen, Ahmed Alcacer, Mrs. Askew, Lisa Baranski, Jim Barnes, Luce Barona, Narcis Barona Sr., Roseanne Barona, Kitty Burke, John Carroll, Julie Castillo, Diana Dietzler, Chuizano, and her family, Dimitri Diamandopoulos, Suzanne Diamandopoulos, Jimmy Gooch and family, Mildred Gooch, Robert Gruber, Tracy Haas Thompson, Annie Hassel, Kathy Hayashi, Francis Hayashi, Travis Henley, Leslie and Joan Inman, Nick Jablins, family of Wendy Johnson, Kenny, Jackson, Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, Nina Kowalski, Mary Lojek, Danny Love, Tom Lynch, R.M., Tom McGinnity, Scotty McLean, Sarah Miller, Colleen Mitchell, Reba Gail Saunders, family of Shyamali Mitra, Evan Myrtle and family, William Oliver, Jay Pandya, Anna Papard and her many cousins throughout the Ukraine, Mark Pristop, Ken Roman, Eileen Rubin and family, Ariana Scott, Rosemary C. Sarai, Basil Shoot, Nancy Sorbit, Freddie Todd, Lopsan Tupton, Bob Utzman, Dion Washington, Jessica Whitmore, Shay Wokowicki, Bodhi the Cat, Dorja and Kadro the Pigs, Grady the Dog. So when Venerable George comes, he will prostrate to the altar, and if you feel uncomfortable doing so, you're welcome just to remain standing. And then we'll be reciting some prayers in this white prayer book on the first bay sheet and on the bottom of the first pink sheet. And at the 10:45 session, Venerable George will probably repeat a similar teaching. I mean, not the exact same words, but very similar topics. So you go to the first base sheet in the white prayer book. Just chant Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Then the four immeasurables in English right below that one time. Taya ta om ne mune maha munaye svaha. Taya ta om ne mune maha munaye svaha. All sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now, if you please turn the page to the first pink sheet, at the bottom you see two mantras. So let's chant Chen Rezig's mantra eight times and Green Tao's mantra seven times. Om
mani pe me hu. Om mani pe me hu. Om mani pe me hu. Om mani pe me hu. Om mani pe me hu. Tare tu tare tu re so ha. Om 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 tare tu tare tu re so ha.
Good morning. This little reminder says 8:20. That can't be right. Must be what 10:10. It's already 9:04. What should it be? 10:20.
No.
Starting at 9.
10:05.
Yeah, 10:05. Okay. Yeah, right. The end of one. Reminder. So. Good morning to the, welcome to the Sunday morning, one of the Sunday morning services here. The last two Sundays, some of you are new, of course, just visiting for the first time, perhaps. Anyone for the first time coming? A couple of people, okay. So the last couple of weeks, I've been sitting in for the resident teacher who's off in India, and I have been talking a little bit about these little prayers we said at the beginning, what are called the four immeasurable thoughts. Immeasurable love, thinking how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the causes of happiness. You recited something like that a second ago. And then immeasurable compassion, how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free of suffering and the causes of suffering. And then immeasurable joy, how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never separated from the happiness and were free of suffering. And fourth one, thank you. And the fourth one, immeasurable equanimity, how wonderful it would be if sentient beings were in a state of equanimity, which is not partial to friends, close to friends, to the exclusion of enemies, you know, putting categories, partiality like that. So in the last 2 weeks, we talked about love and compassion a little bit, just to understand. And today, I'll talk a little bit about this limitless joy, and we'll meditate a little bit on that. But at the very beginning, let's do a little bit of quieting of the mind. Meditation basically is a method. It's not the end all of Buddhism. It's a method in Buddhism to help to leave imprints in your mind more effectively. It's like when you were at the beach, when you press your hand in the sand, if you do it very firmly and without moving your hand, you leave a nice imprint that lasts some time. If your hand is moving and you just lightly touch the sand, you don't leave much of a clear imprint. So if you can keep your mind from wandering under other thoughts and hold it firmly on one topic that you're trying to develop, you're trying to understand, like loving compassion or joy or something like that, you can leave a strong imprint in the mind that's more effective than just thinking about it casually for hours and hours and hours. You can leave an imprint in a short period of time. So as a prelude to that, we are going to watch our respiration to calm the mind. This is a very effective means because if you hold your mind on one object, even if something attractive comes up, and you know, another thought in your mind is sort of like pizza pie or chocolate or what, the Tar Heels? Is there a game today? Was it yesterday? Something comes up in your mind that you might want to attend to. Part of your mind might be actually paying attention to that. If you don't push that thought away, but just bring your attention back to the breathing. We're going to be watching the breathing, not controlling it, which is at first seems like quite difficult to do. Just watch it. And if other thoughts come up, let them go. Put your attention back to the breathing. And over time, you may notice that your respiration becomes more regular. If you do for a good amount of time, your whole metabolism will regulate. You will become slowed down and worries and so forth will start to diminish. Then you can, with a calm mind, you can attend to those problems more effectively. When your mind is agitated, it's more difficult to attend to things, isn't it? Okay, so let's try that. We're just going to watch our breathing. So the way to watch is to recognize that, you know, now I'm breathing in. Now it's just changing direction. Now it's going out. Still going out. Now it's changing direction. Like that. At the end points also, just when it's changing direction, don't let your mind wander. And even though that seems very pedestrian, perhaps just doing this one thing, you may notice some calming effect of this. then bring your attention back to the present. How'd you find that? Good. Any of the new first attendees, did you find any observation? Easy? Difficult? Yeah, I know this. Sometimes if you were to be asked to do that practice for some time, or if you were to attempt to do it, you might think this is boring. Especially if you were a teenager, I think, right? I'm joking. Boring. One thing. There's so many things I can be thinking about. It's almost as though it's an... you can think of it as an ascetic practice. Do you know that word, asceticism? Ascetic practice, something that you endure for spiritual reasons, generally. Or for some higher, you know, philosophical reason, some hardship that you endure, rather than allowing your mind to go off and engage in all of the multifarious modes that it might generally be doing. The Tibetan word for asceticism is kadup, attaining that which is difficult. So it's difficult to not to be fascinated by these other thoughts in our mind. But if you do this for some time, you'll notice there is sometimes we have very little control of our mind. Our mind is jumping around like a monkey in the branches of a tree, picking fruit and being distracted by something else. And not having the ability to focus, you know, just allowing these thoughts to dominate us, we don't really have much control about our own destiny. Oftentimes we're much like Pavlov's dog, or who was a famous psychologist, Skinner, what was it, B.F. Skinner. I actually attended one of his lectures at Yale one time when one of my buddies was attending Yale. And you know who Skinner was, any of you? Behaviorists. Believing that we're very much just reacting to stimuli and so forth. Yeah, so you can think of it as a kind of an ascetic practice, giving up these other things. And in so doing, in focusing on one thing, you actually develop a clarity of mind that allows you to understand other things much better. It's like doing retreat. When you retreat away from worldly activities, even Jesus supposedly went to the garden, to the forest, or the desert, I think it says in the Bible, right? To pray, get away from things. And then the purpose of that then is to be able to attend to our other activities more authentically. When the mind is calm and you're spiritually rejuvenated and so forth. Okay, so that was a little prelude, a little clearing of the mind. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this concept of immeasurable joy, with these four immeasurable thoughts. These thoughts occur in different places in Buddhism. And they have a very deep meaning. In the present context, they're a very good motivation. You know, if you think about the meaning, don't just say the words as though it's just some ritual you have to say, some catechism or something, you know, we have to say this thing at the beginning. Actually, think of the meaning. Wouldn't it be wonderful if all beings had happiness and the cause of happiness? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Think in your mind, there may be many individuals who you don't have that feeling for. People that you have a little grudge toward, resentment toward. If they were to have happiness, you might not feel comfortable about that. So to actually engender this thought is what's called loving kindness in Buddhism. In Pali Buddhism, they call metta. In Sanskrit, the language is called Maitri, loving kindness. subsequent to that, you can say the words and then meditate on immeasurable compassion. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone was free of suffering and the causes of suffering? So, as I mentioned last time, to think, for instance, how that would even benefit you if others were free of suffering. If there was less discontent, if there was no discontent and suffering outside in other people's minds, there wouldn't be the same chaos in the world. You wouldn't have to lock your doors and you wouldn't have to be afraid to walk down the street for fear of being molested or mugged or anything like this. And then to think more openly, not just for the benefit that it might accrue to you, but if other people had happiness, in the same way that if other people were free of suffering, just as we know how wonderful, how calming, secure it is if in our mind there are no worries. Is there anyone here who has no worries? Okay, so there's something bugging us usually, right? Something, even when we've figured out a lot of things, you know, paid off the bills, there's still some kind of dissatisfaction. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could be in those rare moments when everything looks like, okay, no problem. We know how that feels, or we can imagine how that feels if we haven't experienced it. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone were to experience that state, free of suffering and the causes of suffering, an unruly mind, causes of suffering, and you know, the actual experience of suffering. Now, the third thought in this sequence, which has, as I say, many different meanings, it is called immeasurable joy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone was not separated from the happiness that they already have, even higher happiness that's devoid of any kind of suffering? Let me mention for a moment why they're called immeasurable thoughts. Does any of the students that have that come to the, or what can we say, parishioners of the Kadampa Center, any of you know why they're called immeasurable thoughts? You're an older student, aren't you? You know why they're called immeasurable? Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. Do you know, Donna? Why they're called immeasurable?
I'll take a stab at it.
Oh, okay.
I would consider immeasurable because we wish it for all beings.
Uh-huh. I think that's pretty good. I'm going to just have a little bit of warm drink here. In one sense, it is that's true that the sphere of your understanding here is all beings. That includes anything with a mind from a Buddhist perspective. So animals, other beings in realms that we don't now even perceive. The hell realms. Buddhism believes there is a kind of very nightmare-like experience that's possible due to having created negative actions in the past. Upon death, you might experience this for a long period of time. Maybe a little bit like what in the Christian tradition is called hell, which you may have grown up to disbelieve because the nuns at the school were threatening you that if you did this or that, you might go to hell or something like that. So all beings, wouldn't it be so immeasurable in that sense, and immeasurable in other senses? Say, for instance, when you talk about immeasurable compassion, wouldn't it be wonderful if they were free from every type of suffering, not just gross suffering, but subtle suffering and most subtle suffering, immeasurable in that sense also. So immeasurable joy is thinking is really an antidote to a kind of mind that we all experience that we might call jealousy or envy. When someone else experiences good fortune or happiness, sometimes it's difficult to bear. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, like especially, let's say, when we talk about in the everyday interpersonal relationships, if you have a friend who you're very close to, a companion or boyfriend or girlfriend or something, and suddenly you might walk down the street and you see them talking, smiling with someone else, having a good time. Can you imagine that might bring up jealousy in your mind? I think you guys are very holy. You're all looking like, what's he talking about? I wouldn't feel jealousy. I would feel joy in their happiness. Well, some people in situations like that, lesser people than yourself, would feel a twang of discomfort, wanting, let's say, for in that particular example, let's say interpersonal relation, wanting that person to be, quote, faithful to me, or I would be the one that would be their prime focus of having a good time. I would be the one that would bring joy to their, you know, smile to their face. So if someone else is experiencing that, we would feel jealousy toward that interloper, that third person. Do we say, when we, in common vernacular, do we say, let's say, if this is our companion, and this is the person they're spending some time with, we observe, do we feel jealous? We don't feel jealous of the person that we like, do we? We feel jealous of the other person, is that how we say it? We feel envious or jealous. Envy is another word, slightly different. It may come a different image in your mind when you envy someone. In the case of jealousy or envy, it doesn't have to be only in terms of interpersonal relations. Just someone having good fortune, being born with beauty, or winning a contest, or becoming popular, and we envy them, you know, or someone's wealth. Sometimes when that becomes very strong, it's very difficult to bear. For us, it's a state of suffering. And those particular minds of envy and jealousy, there might be an overlap between them. Do you see a difference between those two? Envy and jealousy? But you can see there's basically feeling discontent with other people's, let's say, happiness. If our companion is happy with another person, or if an individual that we observe wins some acclaim or is held in high esteem or is beautiful or whatever, we feel some envy or jealousy. We would like to have that ourselves, or we feel some sense they shouldn't have that. All of those states of mind disturb our real inner peace, our happiness, jealousy and envy. And they create, they themselves are actions, mental actions. And they leave an imprint in our mind to experience something in the future that's uncomfortable. They create what's called karma. You've heard that word before. Karma. Have you heard, ladies back there who have come for some, you've heard, anyone has never heard the word karma before? When I first came to the States, I mentioned one of the lectures before, when I came to Washington, D.C., I flew in from overseas, and in the parking lot I saw a bumper sticker that said, your karma ran over my dogma, something like that, or my karma ran over your dogma. When I ask people what karma means, when I was at the monastery in Wisconsin, school kids come, and they often would say, what goes around comes around. Did I mention this before? No. Have you heard that expression? Is that in some people, have you heard that some people think that's kind of the meaning of karma? What does that mean, what goes around comes around? You get what you give, okay. But do you know the origin of that phrase, what goes around comes around? Actually, it's if you search on the internet, you may find that it comes from the Dark Ages, when the plague, bubonic plague, was going around. So if I say, Venerable, is the plague coming to our village? She would say, what goes around eventually comes around. So it's not so much talking about karma, it's talking about sort of inevitability that something is going to happen. I think a better phrase is sort of, when you were trying to paraphrase what that meant, goes around, comes around, is what Christ is purported to have said in the Bible. I think, unless it's in the Old Testament, ye reap what ye sow. You've heard that expression, eh? Ye reap what ye sow. You get what you deserve, you might say. What you've laid out there, what you put out there, eventually you are going to experience the ripening of that on your own experience. Karma means action. So you are creating an action. In so doing, it's like sowing seeds in a field. You're sowing some imprints into your consciousness. You know, if you constantly are thinking, you know, uncomfortable thoughts, you know, I hate people, you know, so forth and so on, you know, irritated, and the littlest thing will cause you to, you know, traffic jam, you blow up, or you pull the gun from your glove compartment, and you've heard about this, right? They call it road rage. Has that happened around here? It used to happen more in the western states, I think, at one point. I heard more out in California, when big traffic jams and things like that. So you leave an imprint in your mind from actions you do, both good and bad actions, that will have a repercussion on you. So feeling jealousy, feeling envy toward others, creates negative karma, we would say, terminology of Buddhist. They're negative actions. They are negative actions, and they leave an imprint in our mind, karmic imprints, which are like seeds, which eventually will come back to haunt us, and maybe others will be jealous of us in the future. You might think that would be good. I'd like to be in a position where others are jealous. But it may become a hindrance to us. We can experience many kind of unfortunate situations. We create so much negative action that way that can cause us to experience great suffering in the future. So one of the firmest, most effective antidotes to that is, let's say, when someone experiences good fortune, to recognize that this is not come about without cause or unjustly, although it may seem that way sometimes. Someone gets here's an example. Someone gets praised in the office for some work you did. Has that ever happened?
Oh, yeah.
You've done something and someone else gets the recognition for it, and then maybe you're not in a position to feel, to express that, you know, to call out and explain that I actually did that, I deserve the credit. Or maybe you do and the other people ignore you, but someone else, you might think that unjustly someone else has received some credit. Would that make sense? It would seem unjust, right? From the point of view of Buddhism, there's no way that another person could experience some recognition or some status or some success like that unless they created the cause in a previous life, some karmic seed. So if someone experiences wealth, or someone is more attractive than you in your own mind, someone has higher status, has more power, or is recognized in some way, that's a result. If, from a Buddhist perspective, the primary cause of that is actions they've created, virtuous actions they've created in another life. Even if this life, I'm not sure what the sort of old classical literary term is a wastrel, someone who's just, you know, sort of like doesn't do anything and has suddenly become, you know, like the son or daughter of a rich family or something like this, and they're out drinking and wasting all of their time, and you might think that that's unjust, and would you feel jealous about that and envious? Maybe not. That wouldn't be exactly the feeling you'd have, but you'd feel some resentment toward them, right? Or sort of condescension, someone like that. So all of these states of mind create negative karma. Instead of that, to have a mind that recognizes, that feels joy in other people's good fortune, in their happiness, that may be a bit difficult. Some of you may find no difficulty because you're not feeling strong jealousy right now or strong envy or strong resentment. But to find situations in your own experience, to see all of the people around you, and to think in your daily life when that is encountered, rather than feeling jealousy, envy, or resentment, to rejoice in the other person's good fortune, to think, just like that, you know, their happiness is a result of their virtuous karma in the past. And just like that, may I be able to create that kind of karma myself. In so doing, you actually create the karma to experience that by wishing that. Let's say also, when people create the cause of happiness, not just happiness right now, they're generous, or you see them engaging in spiritual activities, or they're talented, you see them doing something, you may feel jealous about that too, or envious that they have the chance to do, let's say from a spiritual point of view, they have a chance to do retreat or meditation, or that there's, something like that. They're creating some good karma. By rejoicing in the good actions of others, rather than feeling jealousy about it, you create as much or sometimes even more virtue than they are creating. I'll give you an example from the time of the Buddha. It was a tradition in the time of the Buddha, this is about 2,500 years ago, that if a patron were to invite the Buddha himself and his entourage, his monks and nuns that were around, if they were to invite them to a meal, it was the tradition afterwards that the Buddha would give a discourse, teaching. It was kind of like, you know, first they would offer something, kind of symbiotic relationship between the laity and the clergy, so to speak. The laity would offer something, in this case food, meal, and the clergy, the Buddha and his disciples, would offer some kind of spiritual advice. So on one of these occasions, a king and his family had offered a very lavish blast, you know, and for the monks, a little bit out of pride, you know, a little bit showing off. You can imagine that? I remember when I was in Italy, there were some towns that had many, many towers. Do you know what I'm thinking of? What were they for? What do they call them?
I can't remember what they called them, but it was about pride.
It was about pride, yeah. Maybe bell towers, not minarets, you know, something like minarets also, but this is talking about Catholicism. In one town might build one, and another town would build one a little taller, and, you know, something. So there's some kind of spiritual jealousy or pride going on. So this is what was happening with the family. And it was the tradition also that after the meal, the Buddha would make a dedication. He would pray that these merits, the good, virtuous, good karma that the family had accrued would multiply and so forth, would bring great benefit and so forth. It's a complicated subject about that. But anyway, there was a beggar outside the fence at this time who saw what was going on. And instead of feeling jealousy that the king was creating this good karma, actually rejoiced, "Oh, wow, if I was in a position to be able to make offering to the Buddha and his disciples, how wonderful that would be. This is so great that the king is offering, or this wealthy person is offering all of this," you know, very positive mind, rejoicing in the good fortune of the other. Both in the fact that they had the resources, but the fact that they were doing a virtuous action, rejoicing in that virtuous action. So at the end, when the Buddha was asked by the wealthy person to dedicate the merits, make prayers, the Buddha pointed out the man outside the fence and said, "I'm going to dedicate his merits because he's created, by rejoicing in what you've done, he's created more virtue than you have created." Does that make sense? We can, if we're at an equal or higher spiritual level than someone else, we may, by rejoicing in their good actions, feeling joy, we can create more virtuous karma than they are actually creating, rather than feeling envious of them. So this particular thought, immeasurable joy, has many facets to it. We are preventing ourselves from feeling resentment, jealousy, and envy that would create negative karma, and instead turning it around and actually creating virtue, putting our mind at ease, becoming a friend to the world. You know, do you know someone in your own life, in your own sphere, family, or life, who is beleaguered by jealousy? Has a problem with jealousy? Are they very popular? We generally see that as something which is not an endearing trait, right? So also, to overcome our own jealousy and envy and resentment, we become more attractive to others, more at peace with the world, less competitive. Often competition comes about because of jealousy. And the competition, if there was a real capitalist materialist here, they might argue with me right now, say, competition is good, right? Well, competition is good, but generally just competition for the sake of trying to outdo other people, become the richest person, the highest status person, the thinnest lady or man, you know, or the, you know, most attractive, or sometimes it drives us crazy and it causes resentment in others. So to have this mind of joy in the happiness of others makes us attractive to others, makes us a friend to others. We don't create negative karma through envy and jealousy, and we create virtue in feeling this joy in the good fortune of others. Does that make sense to you? Anyone have a doubt or a question? You can even rejoice in your own good fortune. Say, for instance, you've come to Kadampa Center, and you do some meditation, and you have some good experience, let's say. I don't know, maybe you're not having a good experience. Maybe you'll leave bummed out afterwards, I don't know. But if you have a good experience, and then you can think afterwards, "Wow, wasn't that good? I wish I would do that again." Or to rejoice in that, to think how wonderful that was, rather than feeling a resentment or discomfort and regret about that. You know, you might think, "I'm never going to do that again. I wasted all that time. I could have been making nachos for the Tar Heels game." You know, yes.
Or even feeling or even feeling pride that you did it. You know, you want to rejoice in it, so that you seal the karma of doing it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you can even rejoice, feeling joy in your own good karma, and your own good condition right now. Being born a human, I'm a human being. I have the ability right now to develop my mind, to become a friend of others, to overcome my grudges, resentments. I have an opportunity right now to leave imprints in my mind for the future. This is an incredible situation. How wonderful it is. Feeling that way creates a tremendous amount of virtuous karma, even sometimes more than what threw us into this situation. That is, good actions we've done in the past that have brought about this human life with good fortune, healthy body and mind, and so forth. Okay, so that's some of the benefits of meditating on immeasurable joy. So immeasurable is done this way. The way you would meditate on this, and we're going to do this now, you imagine around you, first of all, in front, you don't necessarily see with your eyes, but you imagine, eyes partially closed, your enemies in front, maybe particularly people you feel jealous of, their good fortune. Sometimes when you hear news that someone, you haven't even been thinking about them, but they have started some project or they've gotten some recognition, you feel some twinge. Well, that's nothing special. I can do better than that. I have done better than that. Those kind of people, or the people that you feel quite obviously jealous of if there is a problem in your life. And so this is those people foremost in your mind, and then around them, all other living beings. Behind you, particularly those that you are fond of, your family and friends and companions and so forth. So focusing on those that push your buttons. Do you use that expression? I've found that people like that. They know that. He pushes my buttons. He just comes in and I'm angry or terrified or whatever, you know. So if someone pushes your jealousy or envy or resentment button, put them in front. All other beings around that you might feel jealousy toward or, you know, not particular, you know, people that you would not necessarily feel anything about if you heard good fortune. Some stranger, you hear a stranger wins the lottery. Well, maybe sometimes we feel jealousy even of that, isn't it? Someone wins the lottery. Why don't I win the lottery? Why can't I win that? Even though you don't have any kind of resentment toward the person. And try to think in these various ways that I've mentioned that this is their good fortune has come about because of karma they've created, actions they've created in previous lives. Wouldn't it, and so this is just, this is understandable and correct what they're experiencing. Wouldn't it, even taking one argument on yourself, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could create that same karma now? You know, how wonderful it was that they created that action in the past that's bringing this about. You are creating that cause to experience a similar kind of thing in the future. Okay, this is how you can argue with the little devils in your mind that are saying, you know, they don't deserve that, you do. You know, kind of the devil's advocate or something like that. So thinking in that way, see if you can overcome toward particular individuals in your mind's eye that you may feel some jealousy, envy, or resentment of. To overcome that and to think, how wonderful it is that they have happiness. You know, may they never be separated from this happiness. May they continue to have this both now and in the future. May they be endowed with a happiness that is without any kind of suffering whatsoever. If you can think in this way, once the mind is quiet, and then once you've got a glimmer of that, the taste of that thought, you know, that it actually resonates with you. Yeah, that would be good. They would be, you know, if other people were endowed with happiness that was free of any suffering, if they never were separated from that, they didn't decline from that, how wonderful that would be. Try to hold that thought single-pointedly. Try to hold that experience. Then without analyzing or thinking anymore, that can leave an imprint of your mind of this immeasurable joy. Okay? Let's try that. Okay? So we're going to, as they say in the church, let us pray, right? I joke say, let us meditate. Okay? So sit comfortably with your spine straight. Relax your body and relax your mind, which I take to mean, you know, you don't have to think about anything else right now. You don't have to worry about what's happening later this afternoon or things that have happened in the past. You're just going to attend to this meditation. And watch your breathing for 7 respirations very carefully, just to calm it. Then call to mind some individuals that you imagine in front of you, sitting in chairs if you want, standing, whatever, who you feel some envy or jealousy of, or resentment toward their good fortune. Around them in space, all of other people that if they were to experience, what you might call strangers right now, if they were to experience some good fortune, you might feel some discomfort thinking that I should experience that. Behind you, your friends and family and loved ones, not in the forefront of your attention, because it's more easy to think for your friends and family and loved ones that they, you know, how wonderful it would be if they were never separated from happiness. That's easy, or easier in general. So think of, let's say, choose one person to start out with in your mind's eye in front, and think, wouldn't it be wonderful if they were never separated from this happiness that they have, and were to be endowed with a happiness that was free of any kind of suffering. rather than feeling jealousy toward them, recognizing this has come about because of their own, whatever happiness they do have has come about because of their own efforts in past lives. Good karma. How wonderful it was that they created that. May I be able to create the same kind of actions that brings about this prosperity or happiness or recognition, success, spiritual progress, whatever. Rather than feeling resentment and jealousy. You can analyze in various ways, thinking, if I were to even praise them in a group of people, it doesn't diminish my status that they might be held in higher esteem by others or whatever. By my so doing, I will be in a position to be more accepted by others as not being someone that holds a grudge or is jealous or envious and so forth. We know from our own experience, people who praise and are accepting and joyful in other people's success are loved by the community. They don't pose a threat, because there's no sense that we ourselves, if we're feeling joyful in other people's happiness, there's no threat that we might try to attain that happiness, you know, out of envy or jealousy. So we're not a threat to others. We're accepted, we're loved. Move, if there are more than one, several individuals, try to think like that toward each of them, the individual circumstances that you feel some discomfort in their recognition or happiness or success. And see if you can counter that with feeling rejoicefulness. Joy in their happiness. To the extent that you would wish that it would never go away, may they continue to have that happiness. May they never be separated from this happiness and a deeper kind of happiness which is without any kind of unsatisfactory nature, without any kind of suffering. Other people's success does not diminish you in any way. And for your recognition and acceptance of that, you create the causes to have that same success. You're accepted by others around you. You're not viewed as a threat. You're loved. There's harmony, and your own mind is at ease. Fearful state of jealousy and envy is eroded away. Now extend that same feeling toward all the strangers around you in space, some beings in the animal realm, maybe in realms that we can't perceive right now. Other human beings, billions on this earth that we don't know personally, how wonderful it would be if they were never separated from whatever happiness they experience, once they experience it, happiness that's free of any kind of suffering. Your family and loved ones, companions behind you. Now feeling this is not a partiality toward them. It's something that your mind extends to them, that sense of joy, immeasurable joy, in the same way that it does even to strangers or even enemies or those that you feel envious of. There's no threat to your happiness in the happiness of others, in their continued happiness. Even someone maybe who left your friendship for the friendship of another person, even wishing them, even though it might be a very worldly relationship they've engaged in, even wishing them well, may they have the happiness they seek that's free of suffering. Putting your heart at rest. If you can feel that, have some sense of the rightness of that, the joy of that, see if you can hold that conclusion single-pointedly without analyzing any longer, just that glimpse that you have of immeasurable joy. Hold that single-pointedly in your mind. And conclude by thinking, whatever imprints I've left in my mind, virtuous imprints, good, wholesome, may they become the cause of my continued spiritual development from day by day, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, year by year, life by life. As a result of these actions, may I become more content, more happy, and a source of happiness for others. May I, as a result of these actions, may I eventually become enlightened for the sake of all living beings. And then bring your attention back to present. How was your meditation? Any observations? The new ladies in the back, any? Is it again like this? Is it better? Oh, it's a little, okay, that's a little bit better. Any doubts? Or any experience you had in that short time? This is 10 minutes or something? Yes?
I still had a problem with my own ego, like saying, why them and not me? Or look what I've done.
Yeah.
Is that the...
Right. You can imagine the party, one little kid say, but I'm important too, you know, and raising their balloon or something like that, and someone else is getting the credit. Yeah, well, this is what this kind of analysis, it's good that we recognize that, because that means we're developing some good wisdom, because there's some things we don't want to attend to recognize that we have these kind of feelings. So to even to recognize that is very positive, and then to try to work on that has to do with the ego, our feeling that the happiness that other people are experiencing is something that would bring immediate satisfaction to us, like we should be having it now. But by recognizing that, by feeling joy in others' happiness, we will experience that in the future. So we are creating, we're even calling ourselves out in a subtle way in the future to be recognized in that way. Someone else raised their hand. Yes.
Yeah, I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, I guess, make peace in your mind with maybe someone you know who has good fortune and wealth or whatnot, but they themselves aren't very good people? They're boastful or greedy, and I mean, they're not really...
Right.
Showing the trace of someone who did something good to receive that.
Right. Yeah, that's part and parcel of this kind of meditation also. So one of the words in the phrase that is recited at the beginning, may all living beings never be separated from happiness without suffering. So that particular happiness that what they imagine they're experiencing right now, some renown or wealth or good fortune or beauty or whatever it might be, oftentimes is mixed with they're creating a lot of negative actions right now, in sense, which is with suffering. Their happiness is endowed with a kind of cause of future suffering. So wishing that they would experience happiness in the future that's free of any kind of this egotistic, you know, boasting about their situation or using it to oppress other people, their wealth, their power, or condescension, putting other people down, or, you know, raising their own sense of ego. Wishing, seeing that we ourselves, there have been moments in our own lives, maybe we don't want to recognize them, maybe they were few, if you're, you know, a better person right now. But there are times when we've acted like this also. We have some good fortune and then we, you know, we ignore other people that might want to talk to us or something because now they're not worthy of our attention. Maybe there was something when we were a kid or a teenager or say, even now we may notice something subtle like that. And to think we can change, we can overcome that. Wouldn't it be wonderful that we would have that kind of success that others want to connect with, but we would be open and good-hearted and sort of wish that upon others, that they would never be separated from this happiness they have that is devoid of any suffering. Okay? Was there a last question someone else wanted to say? Okay. We've reached the time that that Nana had said this is a good time to finish the session. Thank you very much for your participation. Hope to see you again sometime. And have a good, very good Sunday.